here's the whole thing. This is what I was excited to talk to you about to get you on the podcast. You started in radio like me. You started,
yeah.
By the way, mid-market radio. Yeah. What market did you start in?
I started, my first ever radio internship was Tallahassee, Florida.
Okay.
Then I moved up to Birmingham.
Now you're from...
Which is market 70. It's market, market 59, 49 now. But that's before they did the redistricting. You know, radio,
guys know market sizes.
Yeah, Tallahassee is 91, and then I moved.
Such a dick measuring thing, because Tucson's 63.
It's like playoff seating.
Yeah, you're like, I know exactly what Tucson is. I could have told you, like, back in the day, the top five, where I'd be like, New York, L.A., Houston.
Phoenix,
Chicago. No, Phoenix is 17.
Phoenix dropped.
Phoenix dropped. Well, when I'm
thinking TV.
Up,
I'm thinking TV, Phoenix. I think Phoenix is top 10.
So
TV.
When you... So you were living in Florida.
Yeah, I was in college.
You were in college. I was in college.
Yeah, I created the internship at that radio station.
And it's just because you were, when you were at college, you weren't doing stand-up yet.
A little bit.
You had tried it.
I tried it. I'd done like open, I would go over to Florida State. I went to Florida A&M, but yeah. I would go over to Florida State because I didn't want to get booed on campus and they have to see motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So I would go over to Florida State, pretend to be a star. I lucked out. These two people that ran student activities for Florida State, they were from Birmingham.
Okay. And that's where you grew up.
Correct. And so fucking Megan Adam, they go, hey, anytime you want to fucking come back, just do the student show. And Florida State had comedy every fucking week, bro. It's fucking Bobby Lee and Earthquake. It's like Lavelle Crawford. Like they had beasts.
They had real comedy.
In 98, like Florida State, what I'm telling you, man, Division I tuition goes to some wild shit, bro.
Yeah.
It's fucking, this guy is, he's not nationally known, but it's by his choice. But there's this college beast. I don't even know if he's still touring. They had this motherfucker, Buzz Sutherland. Buzz Sutherland is just like some fucking.
That sounds like, first off, it sounds like a 50s NFL player. But that would be a road comic name where he's like, Buzz Sutherland was one of the best college
comics. It's like when Street Ball or something. Like,
yeah, skip to my
Jimmy Mickey, you know.
You didn't even know Half Man, Half Amazing.
I'm telling you, that was a guy, man, Johnny Too Funny. That motherfucker dunk on you from the 3-point line.
You know what's funny, though, is people don't realize in comedy that exists with every single comic. Every comic knows a guy that chose a real job instead of being the funniest. We all have a friend that
none
we
of us
know.
Are the funniest. No professional comedian is the funniest person in this circle.
No. We all know the guy that's the funniest that doesn't need it. He doesn't need the
He had parents and love growing up.
Or even just got pussy young, something that like changed his brain chemistry. Yeah.
Or like being the funniest at the barbershop is enough for him.
Yeah. Where it's scratch that itch.
Yeah, that's
all.
And we
have a rash of insecurity over our whole body.
So I must travel to, I must meet new strangers.
I need, scratch it, scratch the
local
itch.
Strangers are not enough.
Scratch my itch. Because I started, I started radio first because I didn't believe I could do stand-up. I was like, let me get into radio because I wanted a job that was fun that I didn't hate. And I was like, oh, well, radio. I love radio.
Bro, I kept a foot in radio for 12 years.
That's
while doing stand-up. I had Letterman credits.
Really?
I had everything. And I was still in some capacity. If I wasn't co-hosting, at minimum, I was creating content for the Birmingham station.
So you were
on the off chance that all my LA move blows up in my face.
Yeah.
I know I can always go back to Birmingham.
That, and you do know mornings. What? That makes me feel better knowing someone as funny as you had that, like, well, I got to keep. Because I kept being like, well, if stand-up ever works out, I can always go back to radio. You're always worried, like,
it's hard.
I need something
to let
if
go,
this falls apart.
Especially if you're good at it and there's not a lot of slots in radio. And as the years
radio
went
is a
on,
very hard profession to work in when things were good.
And that's 98 when I started.
Early 2000s is when I started. I started in 03.
So you started at the end of the change in the, I don't want to say the end, but the with the rise of streaming and Napster and satellite radio.
Yes.
Created two convergences. It was like fucking a two-front war.
And I'll tell you something that no one ever talks about that destroyed radio. CDRs, burnable CDs.
Oh, yeah, I make my own mixtape.
Everyone did. Radio stations, that probably lost so much momentum for radio stations that they have no idea, was the ability to create your own mixtapes. You could
or
just
buy them from a local DJ. I would just buy the hottest 30 songs.
This is what I want to know.
DJ the White Stone, and there was a fucking mixtape called The Star Report. It was at the peak of like black radio would just take whatever national news and name a mixtape after this shit. The fucking Ken Starr, Bill Clinton,
that's so great.
Was happening, and it was a mixtape called The Star Report.
Oh my God, there's got to be an impeachment one from 98.
I guarantee you this.
Or the cigars, the blue dress tape.
Yeah,
you start thinking about it. I hope they do that now with the Epstein list. We were like, oh, this is the Epstein list. These are all verses about tropical islands.
Somebody tweeted me, asked me if I was on the Epstein list. And I'm like, you really have the wrong skew of my celebrity.
Yeah.
Also, when the Epstein Island was popping, I was fucking barely a teenager, man. If anything, I would have been an employee, not a fucking guest of the island.
If they do a last dance for Epstein Island, when they do, when it was at its best, when it was at its peak.
More of a catch a predator, but go ahead.
Yeah, Chris Hansen just is. When was Epstein Island at its peak?
Late '90s? That's a good question.
Because then you start thinking about like which one of these Maxim models or FHM one, like can Vita Guerrera speak on like going down there doing rich guy shit? Because everyone thinks it's going to be modern celebrities, but it's not.
I don't think it's going to be enough people where it's going to be a smoking gun to affect anybody's career whatsoever. But this is the type of shit like before. Also, the internet killed radio to a degree because radio was where news was broken.
Yeah.
So to get the latest gossip, you had to come to us in the morning to figure out what was what.
What was your celebrity gossip called? 411? Which one was it named? Morning shows always had a name for like...
My co-host, New York at the time, who's now here at WBLS in New York City.
radio guys can throw out called
WBLS and WJ
like gang fashions. Oh, she's a Rolling 66 now.
Yeah, I was at WVHT High 105.7 North Florida, South Georgia's number one. Then I moved over to WALR and Kiss 104 Atlanta.
I was at 92.1 and 101.3 KFMA. Then I moved to 92.3 WXRK, which was also known as K-Rock. It really is like a speak. Radio, young kids aren't going to have any idea the power that it had.
No.
But 98, you're in Birmingham.
Well, at the time I was in Tallahassee. I got to Birmingham in 01 when I graduated. And our co-host in New York, our news was called The What Had Happened Was.
Great.
Because like with black people, like, what happened? Well, what had happened was, blah, 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 happened.
Did you ever, did you ever hear that old Russ Maneev joke where he says the what had happened? He said that a girl says that to him at his bodega. And he goes, can I get a pepperoni pizza bagel? And she goes, what had happened? He goes, well, what had happened was I woke up hungry. And I came down here. It's an old joke that I always think about whenever I hear what had happened was. But
so I did radio.
So you graduate 01.
I graduate 01. I move back home. I get an internship off of a lie to the comedy club. Because at the time, so Ricky Smiley, who is a syndicated legend now and stand-up comic, and you know, he's walked the walk. But chose radio as the more, if we're talking a 60-40 ratio of income.
Yeah.
He's a radio guy.
He'd lean more. He'd go do a live remote before he'd go do a gig.
Correct. And he still does a live touring. But at the time, that was the rise of Ricky in the South. So Ricky Smiley is and is still comedy god in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
He was the first one from that market to really break through nationally. So when he left.
Get you shut down at the Stardome.
No bullshit. Like you fucking Ricky could make a call and
I love that old school comedy, hey man,
we gotta pull you off the show tonight.
I love that old school town one guy running shit.
We heard you did some of Johnny Two Funny's material from last week. So
you and Ricky Haha were stealing off Johnny.
But you know, back in those days, especially black comics, motherfuckers would check you for stealing jokes. They would pull up to your fucking show and fight you of this back and forth over the internet, and that's my joke, and that let's compare clips. No, I'm gonna just show up and I'm gonna beat the shit out of you, and then I'm gonna tell everybody that I beat the shit out of you.
Which
now you're persona non grata, at half of the rooms where you can work.
But it's funny to know that someone got their ass whooped for being like, yeah, you ever, a pussy gets wet like this? It's like doing that bit. Yeah, that's the joke that got you beat up. Like, yeah. You ever, what got your ass kicked? Well, I was doing this joke about you ever fuck a girl and her eyes roll back in her head, and it turns out that
there's two comedians, I'm not going to name their names, I'll tell you off air.
Yes, which I will get.
They got into we decided to stay with their argument instead of going to commercials or playing music. And this is back before we kept logs and
so for those of you who don't know, in radio, working in radio, commercial logs are the most important thing. Once they're introduced, it's the law. It's how the station makes money. It's how everything, like, they will say cursing, whatever you want to call it, is secondary on air. Like, if you cuss on air,
don't miss your spots.
It's not as bad as if you miss spots. If you miss the log, if you miss the commercials.
They add timeouts to NFL games just to play more spots. Yeah. That's radio, how important.
Radio is like, you do not fuck up a log. So if you guys chose just to keep going.
These two motherfuckers got into an argument. And one guy, the guy that was in studio was a guest. He's performing at the Stardome in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And he gets to talking shit about a local guy.
Okay.
On his, so you're talking shit about a local on his station
where he can listen.
You're a guest in my city and you're talking shit about me on my radio station.
Yeah.
Oh, motherfucker, I'm gonna call the station.
Oh.
And they got into a 20-minute argument about who was the first to pull their pants up really, really high on stage. That was the bit.
It's never going to be something crazy original, or it's always something like hacky and like, yeah, you were who was the first one to fuck the stool?
You
me
put
or you?
The goofy teeth in your mouth, and then you know, like the redneck hillbilly teeth you can put in your mouth.
Yeah.
It was that. Like, one of them does a bit where they put the hillbilly teeth in and hitch their pants up. It's a hilarious bit, but
it's physical comedy.
Let's not argue the origins of, and for 20 minutes, these two motherfuckers went at it like rabbit dogs. Then
Judge Ricky Smiley?
No, Ricky wasn't involved. I didn't know
if they brought in the honorable Ricky Smiley to call.
It was a matter of principle. And a couple of months later, they happened to be performing in the same city and they had a fight. That's the most details I can give you on here without people being able to go and back engineer who they are.
My question is,
what I'm saying is, like, if you stole from me,
we'd fight.
We are going to fight. You talking shit about me in my hometown. By the time I get to the radio station, you're going to be gone. That's cool. But sooner or later. And the motherfucker found him and he fucking fought.
I wish we kept that law.
We used to fucking have standards in this business.
Well, that's all gone now, because now someone with like a lot of followers does your joke and all of a sudden you're like, well, now I have no, I can't fight that.
That boy talked that shit. They talked that shit, and then one of them got knocked out at their merch table in front of their fans 3 months later.
Which, how do you not put a shirt over the knocked out body, take a picture, and sell that as the poster? If I'm snoozing, if I get put to sleep in front of my merch, take the picture, because we're selling more merch with that picture than we are without it.
Like the Ghetto Boys when Bushwick got shot in the eye.
Yeah, when they in the hospital with him on the cell phone.
And they just put him on a gurney. Yeah. He said, take the picture, album cover.
Yeah, dude, that's what it is. If you get, because comedy, and you know, we always talk about this, comedy is always losing. That's why, like, this boom of cool comedy doesn't work. Because you're supposed to be a loser. You're supposed to be the guy. It's funnier if you get knocked out than if you knock a guy out.
And then tell the story. It's like how Chris Rock has a better story to tell than Will Smith.
Yeah, if he would have been the Will Smith, that wouldn't have been funny.
Yeah, if Chris had fought back and like won, that's still not a funny story.
No, it's better if you're the victim. If you're the punchline, that's funnier.
Yeah, but man, I did radio. Ricky leaves town to go start a new show. So now I'm the guy replacing Ricky. And so they do a huge...
Like a local... You're replacing a local legend.
A literal legend.
And this is after you interned.
I've interned in Tallahassee. This is the only reason that got me to conversation in Birmingham, was because I had a degree in broadcast and I was actively doing stand-up. It's the only reason Birmingham even considered me. Mind you, my father is a fucking radio legend from... Literally from the South African Soweto riots, my father, up until his death in 95, was a Birmingham news radio legend.
Really?
So that helped. Roy Wood Sr.? Correct. That helped get me a foot in the door. My father covered embedded with Vietnam soldiers, Soweto riots. He was in Zimbabwe, Rhodesian Civil War shit.
So every, war zones.
Every conflict you can name from like the freaking 40s till
Korea
till
Wolf.
Rodney King. My pops was there with a tape recorder. So he's a respected name. And I have a brother also named Roy who was, at that time, he was the evening anchor on NBC 13 in Birmingham. So I have pedigree journalistically.
I mean, journalistically, your family runs the news in Birmingham. Yeah,
but motherfucker, is you as funny as Ricky Smiley?
Dude, that's so
all,
funny.
That's
to be,
all Birmingham.
You come from like the Cronkites of Birmingham, and then they're like, but Ricky Smiley,
can
a name
you do
like that.
Prank calls, yeah. Though.
Dude, it's funny to think that your dad's out here busting like really major stories, and your brother's like, this just in, the Challenger has exploded, and you're going like, did you put your ass on the phone? Like,
yeah.
You're doing like radio calls.
I'm calling.
Like, the door is not open.
And I'm calling like, gas stations to book celebrity barbecues.
Oh, I love it.
Like just silly shit.
Did you? Was there ever an insecurity about that? Was there ever like
living in a shadow?
Yeah, like because your family's like your dad's like this journalistic.
Yeah, but I grew up at that time in my 20s. I was 21. I had a chip on my shoulder about my pops, so I didn't care about the shadow. My goal was to eradicate his reputation.
So you were like, watch me.
It was
right. By.
Yeah, it was on some. Good father, bad husband. So, okay. You know, my pops, our relationship was very two-sided. It wasn't as level as you would like for a relationship to be, but there was still a lot of respect professionally.
Yeah, but that drives you to be like.
But that drove me to be, I'm going to make them forget your name. Not realizing that the more I rise, it only helps him because you cannot escape. Who you are. You cannot escape your father's
junior. So it's like they're following the name all the way to the end to realize it's a different person.
It took me almost 20 years to realize that his legacy is his legacy and I'm just building my own and they stand together. It's two buildings. It's not one building growing higher and shadowing the other. Like inevitably, if my legend grows, so does his.
What?
Because I stand on his shoulders.
At what point did you have that breakthrough? Because I'm coming from a completely opposite perspective where absentee father, gone, dead. I have the thing of like, well, I'm going to make my name. When I was young, 21, getting into comedy, it's like, well, I'm going to make this a name because... So I just know that in my 30s was when I was like, oh, this has nothing to do with him at all. Was it in your 30s that you realized
that? Yeah, it was when I had my son.
Really?
It was long. I had my son until 37.
Yeah.
What am I, 45 now? Yeah. So it was somewhere around when I had my kid where it just reconstitutes fatherhood. And then you look back at the relationship and you're, okay, well, there's some things I could have done better and some things he could have done better. Well, you know.
Yeah, you start.
Yeah, but because... I have to take the best of him and also give that to my son.
Sure.
So it forced me to look at the good things about my dad.
Yeah.
And then you realize how many of those qualities are in you now. And you look up at yourself in your 30s and you go, fuck me, I'm him.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that rides around the city doing nothing but as many good deeds as possible in Birmingham. When I'm out in the grocery store, people speak to me. It's a friendship. Like Birmingham is different in that. It's not a city where I think I'll ever be famous.
Sure.
I haven't performed there in 12 years because I don't think I could sell a ticket because everyone knows me. It's like, I'm your cousin. I'm your uncle.
They're very familiar, but they would buy a ticket to see you in another city if they were there.
And they would support me in a heartbeat. When we had, the Daily Show ratings, I fucking carried Alabama. On my back.
Yeah. They go like just someone keeping stats in the office at Comedy
Central.
Yeah.
There's a spike in Alabama.
Alabama's off the charts.
Bro, we did an Alabama week. And we went down and covered the state of Alabama for a whole fucking week and just did stories focused on that community. And a lot of that is because of, that's like you said, everything's data now.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you fucking went down there. So that place... I still go back and that's part of my fault. I'm also super visible. Every time there's something charitable to do.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I know, and I'm cool with that. So, but that's exactly who my father was.
He just going around doing that?
He did good stuff. He helped a gang of people. Man, your daddy hired me the one time and the thing. I go around and do radio now.
Yeah.
And I'm, oh, bro, when I did the correspondence dinner.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, there is a table. American Urban Radio Network. My dad was one of the co-founders of the National Black Network, which in the 70s was a syndicated news channel dedicated to only delivering black news. It was the first of its kind. So the idea...
If you sunburn, get the fuck out of that. Yeah. Your news will not be covered. So, you freckly fucks, get out of here.
They did. You freckled fucks.
You freckled fucks got your own news.
You freckled fucks.
Go put on your SPF 50 and get the fuck out of our face.
Bro, for like, and keep in mind, this was in Chicago at WVON. My father was one of the people to give Don Cornelius some of the front money for Soul Train. Like, he was a good dude. Like, didn't take no producer credit, which you fucking shit out of.
I mean, my God. First off,
he didn't believe an idea, which I understand at the time.
But it is funny. He's like, I have his friend Don, and his friend Don's like, what if there was a train? A Soul Train.
That's literally, that's pretty much what the conversation was.
If they do the Don Cornelius biopic and he's that's like, it's like, Roy Wood Sr., I know you're not going to believe me.
I wish
you had to play your dad.
I wish they would have put it in the, there was a show on BET called American Soul. It went two or three seasons and they showed the moment where Don met my dad. They added that to the series. They didn't show the moment where my dad turned down the Soul Train bread, but my father met Don Cornelius. Don Cornelius used to be a cop. He pulled my dad over for a roll for rolling through a stop sign. My pop goes, you have a nice voice, motherfucker. Come work at this radio station. Fuck this police shit. Don Cornelius says, bet. Starts doing radio. And then that began Don Cornelius's journey through media. And my father was one of the people he went to. Hey, give me a couple of dollars. I got an idea. We're going to do some Dick Clark shit.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, all right, here's some money, but just bring it back. You want to be a producer? No, just bring me back my money. Ain't nobody going to watch that shit.
And then it becomes Soul Train.
It became Soul Train.
You know what's funny about that is deep voices are the only other thing besides being hot that get you jobs where you go like, you know, like Pam Anderson got discovered at like a Toronto Argonauts football game on the big screen. And they were like,
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. They like showed her and everyone was like, who is that girl's gorgeous. And then she became like the Molson Ice girl. And then like,
and then off to the races.
And then off to the races. But it really is that thing where you're like, do you know why I pulled you over? And he goes, that's a great voice. And he's like, well, I'm just a cop. And then it's like, well, you got to get, it's the only other thing besides being sexy is having a voice that someone's like, I could listen to you read. Remember the golden voice guy?
The homeless guy.
Homeless guy in Cleveland. Yeah. And it turns out he was a radio guy that just partied his dick off out of the industry.
It just fell off.
They just fell off. And then he got all that money and he's like, looks like I'm back to my old habits. When you fall off the wagon with that voice, looks like it's time to do cocaine again.
I will snort that, please.
I'm looking forward to doing that rail a blow. So dad basically is was one of the reasons Soul Train.
My dad is one of the backbones of black radio.
That is... So you're doing the correspondence dinner.
So I'm doing the correspondence dinner, and there's the American Urban Radio Network, the National Black Network eventually through mergers and blah, blah, blah over the decades became American Urban Radio Network, which is still standing to this day. And it's a collection of syndicated black content and of cross genres of formats of music.
Yeah.
And afterwards, just black person after black person after black person is just coming up to me and just going, your dad hired me, da, 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 da. I first worked for your father and da da da. Your father helped me with the da da da. Just countless motherfuckers just from across the country. So when you have a kid and you're trying to figure out, well, what's the best parts of me? And then you're comparing, well, what's the best parts of your pops? And there's a lot of shit on the list that matches up.
Yeah.
You have to accept that you are him.
Yeah.
There is no erasing him. You literally are him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're 50% his DNA.
Yeah. So that's when I... like let go of the shit. But at the time in Birmingham when I was 21 and I'm trying to get a job and I'm trying to replace Ricky Smiley, my point to all of that is that that's how huge Ricky Smiley was that I needed stand up, a degree in journalism, and my family reputation just to get a chance to even be thought that maybe you could replace Ricky and sit in that chair.
I mean, that is a massive, being that young and replacing a legend is, especially at the time when radio is as big as it is, people don't realize that is a massive ask.
Pete Howard Stern, Opie and Anthony.
I mean, radio.
Star and Buck Wild, Wendy Williams.
Star and Buck Wild was massive.
Tom Joyner, Morning Show, Big Boy on the
Big
West
Boy
Coast.
Was L.A. Kevin and Bean were at K-Rock L.A.
Bubba Love Spawn. Bubba I don't even give him love. He was running shit at the time.
Yeah, I mean, in Florida, you also had Mike Calta, who went by Cowhead.
Yes.
And then you had up in Chicago, you had Cowman. What the other cow?
Oh, Man Cow.
Man Cow.
Yeah.
You had Man Cow and Cowhead, but it was like an apocalyptic world when like different places run the territories. Where it's like that was what radio
it's
was.
Game of Thrones. It's thiefdom.
It was, and it was like Stern was the first one to go syndicated, and then everyone followed. You know, and you had ONA syndicated. You had Star and Buck Wild were syndicated.
Yeah,
Big
Tom
Boy
Joyner ran the South. Star and Buck Wild had the East Coast. Big Boy had everything west of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Parr had kind of that middle Big Ten, Big 12 territory.
And I remember I was working in radio. I was in Tucson when Stern left K-Rock in New York and went to Sirius XM. And I remember them carving it up between Adam Carolla was the West Coast and David Lee Roth was the East Coast.
Really? That's who they gave the East Coast station?
At first. And then he failed so bad that they gave it away to people. But I worked, when I moved here in 07, I was doing the same thing where I was like, I need radio. I can't just do stand-up.
Well, radio would help sell tickets. So my idea was this. If I could do prank calls as good as Ricky, then it'll give me the creative freedom to do everything else I want to do in radio. I wanted to do goofy songs and funny sketches and like take it back to that 1950s radio play type shit, but for urban radio.
Sure.
But that's a tough sell to a PD who just got fucking 5 years out of a guy who just every morning just could just improv the most hilarious prank calls. And he would do funny calling characters. Oh, fuck, Bob and Tom.
Bob and Tom
was a little later, like, late 90s, early 2000s.
But they made comics in a way that, similar to ONA, where if you got on Bob and Tom and you
More relevant than Letterman.
For me. Well, for touring. If you did Bob and Tom, I remember Nate Bargatze, I was opening for him. This is like 08. He got a call to do Bob and Tom. And we were like nervous. We were like driving out to the gig and he's like, we were in a parking lot somewhere. And he's like, I got to wake up at like 7 a.m. and do Bob and Tom. And we were like, bro, here we go.
That shit changed my touring before I left the building.
Really?
Bob and Tom. And it's not, and I say that with respect to David Letterman and late night as a whole. But by the time I did Letterman in 06, I'd already been on Bob and Tom for 2 years, so I could have a comparison of which one changed my life in a more instantaneous status. Late night in 06 wasn't 1996. It was a great credit. It was great leverage within the industry. But to say that the general public's level of give a fuck about you was swayed, radio for me swayed people faster. It swayed club owners faster than being on Letterman and at that time.
And this is just something that's interesting for two guys that have done both radio and stand-up our whole careers. You see it now again with podcasts. Podcasts are the new radio.
Yes.
You get on a podcast, it can change your touring more than any TV appearance.
1,000,000%.
Like, look at Rogan. Rogan, I've watched him make a lot of my friends millionaires. It's like you go on, like, remember What the Fuck when Maron came out? Yeah. It was like, if you got on that, it would change who listened to you.
And Maron started that because Air America got 86'd by Sirius XM.
That's exactly what I talked to him about, because I got fired from K-Rock a month after Maron got fired from Air America. And I was like, you don't remember when we talked at Eastville about getting fired from radio? And he was like, oh man. And I was like, yeah, dude, I remember. Because radio, the thing about radio, and I still have friends that work in radio, it's like it was shrinking to the point where you're like, how are you making your living doing this? It got scary because they started automating everything. Hey everybody, hitting the road in 2024. A lot of fun shows coming up. February 3rd, I'm gonna be at New York Comedy Club in Stamford, Connecticut. February 4th, I'm going to be at the Funny Bone in Hartford. Then February 17th, two shows at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. First show almost sold out, so get tickets before it does. Second show, there's tickets available. DanSoder.com for all those. And then Cleveland, Ohio, coming to Hilarities, one of my favorite clubs. I'm going to be there February 22nd through February 24th. So the month of February is all up at DanSoder.com. We'll see you in Connecticut, in Massachusetts, and in Ohio. DanSoder.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast or following me. Whatever. However you took this. Thank you.
And I tried it for a year. Bro, when I was doing Daily Show my first year, I was still doing mornings in Atlanta on a satellite box. I was in.
You were doing ISDN?
I was doing, no, because my building wouldn't allow me to install one. So I was on a Verizon 4G internet card.
Just calling every morning?
Every morning doing live breaks and in between. Now, granted, this is in the later days of radio where you only took two breaks an hour, 2 3-minute breaks, one at the 10, one at the 40. So if we pre-recorded a couple breaks, I could get an hour to myself to be a father in the morning. I have a
This is when you were right when you had your son.
Got a 1 year old, and I'm in the living room doing morning radio in Atlanta. And then we off the air. We go into a music sweep at 9.
So I like sweeps. At 9. God, I love the radio talk. Really, we just goosing me
music.
Up.
We just play music for an hour till 10. And play spots. So I would get off the air at 9 and I would be in morning meeting by 9:10.
The Daily Show.
I'd be at the Daily Show and then I would start my day at the Daily Show.
So you worked two full-time jobs.
And then I got off the Daily Show at 6 because in those days, whether you were on the show or not, you were either working on a piece or editing a piece.
Is this when John's still the host?
No, this is Trevor. This is all first year Trevor. This is like late 2015, early 2016. And at this point, I would get off air I would leave Daily Show at 6, come home, be a father till 8, and then I would hit the clubs because I had an hour special that I was polishing. So now I'm in the clubs till midnight. Now I lay down and I get back up at 5 in the morning, do my show prep for 30 minutes for Atlanta. At this point, I had to hire an intern from the show. I was paying him $50 to send me just
news stories.
Just send me news stories. Send me 20 stories.
That is now.
And then I would get up and then I would fire up my old Verizon 4G card at 5:45 and be ready for the first break at 6:10.
So you're going on air. I mean, you're going on air at 6 a.m.
Yeah, live.
Live. And then you're basically working up until midnight with maybe 4 hours to yourself.
On average, 4 hours. But
how good did it feel to quit that?
It felt good, but there was still the paranoia because I still didn't have the job security at Comedy Central yet. I was still on first year rookie deal. So
you're on a rookie contract and you're like, I got to get this.
I got to quit radio because I need the mental real estate.
Yeah. Well, you
to do comedy and Daily Show correctly. And if I do those correctly, I'll make more money.
Sure.
Which will cover quitting radio.
Yeah. Now that's
a theory. That's all you're operating on. Well, that point.
As someone that, and both of us coming up doing radio, I think there's a part of it where you start writing it off where you don't think radio is an effort because you came up doing it wanting to do stand-up.
Yeah,
so
but
when
you know.
So when you do stand-up, though, you're like I remember when I would do, like I got Bonfire and I got Billions at the same time.
Oof.
And I remember going like, well, Bonfire's just hanging out. That's not work. This is me and Jay bullshitting for 2 hours. I got to work on the scene.
Was twice a week, right?
No, we did it four times. Four shows a week, hours a day.
Oh, Lord.
So that's what I mean when I say like...
And y'all weren't pre-recording because y'all took calls.
Yeah, we took calls. We were live. But I got my final thing with radio through the Bonfire because I got fired from K-Rock in 2009 and I was like, I'm done with radio. The way they let us all go, the way it was like... We all knew it was coming, but they didn't want to tell us it was coming. So they just started laying people off in like levels where you're like, hey, we all know you're going to wipe us out. Just tell us you're going to wipe us out so we can start looking. And they're like, nah, you're fine. And then music director gets fired and then they hire someone else. Then he gets fired. They start doing format changes.
That's why you got to leave, bro. When you feel that shit getting
But
weird.
I was here. I was in New York. I was on air in New York where I wanted to do stand up. And so the only other option would have been like move to Des Moines and do afternoons at the rock station.
Correct.
So I was like, I was watching it slip away. So when I got fired from K-Rock, I was like, fuck radio. Radio's dead anyways. Yeah. And then got this opportunity with SiriusXM where they were like, do you want to do a show? And I was like, well, yeah, Jay and I want to do a show. And they were like, well, let's do, I got to do my own thing in a way that felt better than anything I've ever done in radio, where it was like, oh, I get to go in and just be me and I get no notes.
It's got to be that. And to me, terrestrial radio is still run by consultants. And I've had, and like when I left Daily
Show. Oh, the consultants in terrestrial radio. If people knew at home how many of these guys, I was trying to think of the guy, Darren or Dylan, that used to be the consultant that would come in and fuck up KFMA. But then he would be like, I might be able to get Metallica for your big concert. But then he would like ruin all these great ideas.
Yeah, radio stations pay private companies.
Yes.
$500,000 to come in and tell them what they're doing right and wrong.
Yes.
Based on what they've observed at other stations that they're also contracted to.
They're trendsetters. They don't know the actual station they're working with. They're just coming in and
here's something that worked over there.
Yeah.
Try it here. But I understand why they do that, because 80% of radio stations are owned by four companies now.
So when I was in radio, Clear Channel was the enemy. And then when I got fired, they changed to iHeartRadio.
Yeah.
I love radio. Motherfucker, you were ruining it. When you were Clear Channel, you were buying up every station and making it all the same.
Yeah, every market plays the same. There's like a bucket of 120, 130 songs, and you can pull from that bucket and only.
And they have different
bucket
categories like power, gold, like they have
recurring,
like different. Yeah,
power news.
Oh, dude, let's get into the programming talk.
Yeah.
I could do programming talk all day.
Yeah,
but there
was a song that was the shit last year that you don't mind hearing again, that you're not quite tired of.
Yes.
That would be a power news versus new power, power new.
And they would program it like boop, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Snake schedule fantasy draft, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3.
That's
four.
Why when you listen.
Throwback jam.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, that's why four, when five. Anyone listens to radio and they go, well, they play all the long songs, you go like, well, it's actually, that is true. It's by design. It's so that they can, Mike, do you think, and this is just a theory, do you think if someone had the balls in terrestrial radio to go like, let's just open it up, let's just get as close to breaking the FCC as possible, and let's let people program what they want to program, play what they want to play.
You'd be betting your job. Bet your job on it. Also, the other problem with radio, in my opinion, to a degree, is that they rely heavily on research and these ratings monitors that people can basically in real time, they can see down to the syllable when someone changes the station.
Yeah.
So near the end of me in Birmingham, and at least you got an email, I found out on Twitter that I was fired.
No way.
Yeah, I've been there 12, 13 years. It's crazy. What's weird,
what was the tweet?
What's even weirder about radio is that I'm not even mad at the dude. Like, we're still cool. Like, we're cool now. It wasn't cool then.
But you're cool the way boxers are cool after a fight.
Years later, in retrospect.
Where you guys are both at a Nissan opening, and you guys are both shaking hands going, you beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, but I get it. You fired me partly because I moved to LA, and I was doing the show on a sat line, and we both agreed that the show needed to be done locally.
Sure.
To grow into syndication, but I felt you were reneging on syndication, and Steve Byrne offered me that fucking sitcom on TBS, and I lived in LA 7 years and didn't book shit, and the year I moved back home to do radio, finally, as a host, burn off of your sitcom.
Yeah, that's great.
You're bullshitting. So yeah, fire up the old Verizon card, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And I used to get up. You think the fucking Atlanta shit was crazy with Daily Show. When I was living in LA doing Sullivan and Son, I was up at 3 a.m. West Coast to do 5 a.m. show prep.
Yeah.
For an hour. We show prep for an hour because I was the host, so I had to be a little more thorough. And then we would do the show 4 hours. Then I would get up and go to rehearsal all day for multicam.
And then have to wake up and do it again.
And then do sets that night, bitch, because I'm in LA and I'm on a sitcom. So you can't lose this heat. You got to go out in the clubs.
You know what? It
was psychopath. I'm
you don't realize how exhausted you are. Like when...
But it was like, God damn, I was doing it. And
yeah,
back,
but that's
like,
the part that gets you through. But you see, you know, like I think a lot of people when... And we've watched friends of ours get very famous and kind of fall off with stand-up. We won't name names, but we know people that have gotten really big and then their stand-up falls off a cliff and you realize, well, yeah, they're doing 40 things. They're not just doing stand-up. So, because you get all these opportunities, but people that see your stand-up at that moment maybe don't realize that you're hosting a morning show in Atlanta, you're on Sullivan and Sons, you're on, and you're doing stand-up. So someone that just likes your stand-up is like, oh, I don't know.
I can show you episodes of Sullivan and Sons where I'm about to fall asleep.
I would love to break that down. I want to tell you right now, I will do a sleepy tape episode of this podcast, and we will come in and watch all the episodes where you are about to fall asleep.
Because fucking season one, the script was like 60 pages. I probably had 3 pages of lines.
Yeah.
So the extent of me in every episode of Sullivan and Son, it's just in the background drinking fucking ginger ale with TV foam on top. Yep. So it looks like beer. So I'm just drinking fucking ginger ale for 5 hours.
You're
during
talking
a taping. And I'm fucking sugar pre-diabetic, nodding off.
Yeah, you just falling asleep. Like, get him another soda. And you go, my feet are tingling. Please don't do that. There was a lot of Billions where I would have like a 12-hour day with a line. And then I'm just in the background fake typing on a computer. And there's moments where it's like, dude, there's moments where I'm just like staring.
It's hard.
You can
bro.
Tell a couple episodes where I'm just like, looking at the computer, and they're like, I couldn't even fake type. I was tired.
Yeah, it was all worth it. But just if I got back into radio, I do miss it. I do miss the connection with people. That's the thing that I miss most. And that's the thing that I love the most about The Daily Show, but also became more difficult to do.
Sure.
Near the end of my run was.
Well, you're also getting more exciting stuff, too.
Like, because the job of correspondent, you're still going out and talking to people. But once we got into the guest host rhythm of the show,
yeah,
it was hard to gauge what story to send chorus. Like, Klepper had his beat, but as a correspondent, you weren't going out the doors frequently.
Sure.
Because also you were needed at the barn to do sketches and do other interactive shit. And we were down a man because Jabuki had left, you know, Ronnie is doing Marvel movies and Crazy Rich Asian sequel. So we're operating on like an 8-man roster. Yeah. We're supposed to be, you know, full strength, supposed to be running 13. So I wasn't going out as much. So there's part of that human connection that like, yeah, I would love to get that back. But to get back in radio, it would be like, it's like Casino when they asked De Niro to run the Tangiers.
Yeah.
Like, all right, if I do it, it's got to be my way. No interference.
Yeah.
My rules.
My rule. Yeah, that's what
no
you are.
No one else can tell me what to do. It's my club.
Do you see a De Niro Casino moment coming up? Like maybe when you're older and the touring for stand-up has calmed down and you've done stuff.
I think,
would you move back to Birmingham and be the guy?
I don't know if I would move back to Birmingham for radio specifically. I do know eventually I will end up back in Birmingham.
That's where you're going
to
end up.
I love the city too much and I care too much. But right now we're trying to get... you know, I hosted the All MLB Awards show, and part
David Perdue. I saw Dave in Atlanta.
Yeah, and so part of my reasoning for doing that show was to start getting in the mix and building a relationship with Major League Baseball, because there's a lot of opportunities where baseball and, you know, with CC Sabathia and the work that he's doing with trying to keep Black kids, you know, in the sport. And they're renovating Rickwood Field for the throwback game that they're doing next year. And that Rickwood's in Birmingham. That's the field where I grew up playing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good that could be done. And I think ultimately what my role is to the city of Birmingham, I am the middleman liaison between the city and the money faucets across the country.
That's great, though.
So that's what I'm trying
that's
to do.
That's like an importance on the level of your of what your dad did.
Let me leverage you're my an ambassador. Little bit of celebrity. Yeah. Hey, have you thought about Alabama for this?
Yeah, you went
thing?
Out and spoke to the coastal elites, and you can bring their...
Pretty much.
You can bring their Epstein Island money into Birmingham.
Jesus, Major League Baseball, I'm sorry. If you're on Epstein Island, I'm not
Major League
about
Baseball, you owe our family an apology, because Katie had a great season.
What if Epstein's list just says... football.
Yeah, you go, oh no. Oh, Brady, Manning, all of them.
Yeah, so like radio, bro, like getting that job in 01, like I lied to get the, because they audition a gang of people after Ricky leaves. They hire nobody.
Yeah.
And then I come to town like 3 months after the con, they're just like, we're just not going to have a comedian for a while, and we'll just have more comedian guests from the comedy club.
Sure.
And I go in, I go, hey man, you know, I play the local club here. you know, could I come in and audition? Here's my air check, which is like your audio resume.
I have air check tapes in this at the top of that closet. I have about, I'm not joking when I tell you, 20 CDs that are all air
just
check tapes.
Just you talking on the radio. Just listen me doing, to me talk.
Just me doing speed breaks at KFMA.
So,
and K-Rock.
He goes, thanks, man. We're really not looking for anybody right now. I go, well, can I just create content? Can I do news updates for you? Because that's what I was doing in Tallahassee. I was just hard news, like my
pops. Now you're at the point of the interview where you're just going, let me in the building.
Yeah, this isn't even an interview. Yeah. This is in the parking lot. Like, I'm stalked this motherfucker at the staff entrance. Yeah.
He's got his keys in his hand. He's like, what are you doing to me?
5:30 in the morning.
Really?
Samuel Mack. I fucking ambushed this motherfucker because that's what Ricky Smiley did. That's how Ricky Smiley got the job.
Was he just bothered a guy in the parking lot?
Ricky Smiley showed up to that fucking radio station every fucking morning and cracked on them as they walked in the door.
That's a great way to show your skills. Roasted them. Unless it goes too well, unless you hit a topic that he doesn't want to talk about, Ricky, then he's like, I will never hire you, motherfucker.
The story is it was told
to me. I do waddle like a duck.
Back in those days, the radio station, when Ricky started, the radio station was on ground level, like, and you could just see in off the street.
Yeah, that's how ours was.
And he would just roast them through the glass.
That's great.
In the morning, just, and they're like, you got to come inside. Sorry, you got to go. So, I go to Sam Mack, Buckwild was his name, not the same Buckwild.
Yeah.
And I go, man, just let me sit in. Yeah, we're not done. I go, okay, cool. So then what I remembered was that 95.7 Jams always hosted the black comedian that Friday at the Stardome. And Stardome every other week, it was D.L. Hughley or Adele Monique and all those
things. Yeah.
And so.
Some more.
Correct. So the radio station would come and give out shirts on stage before introducing Samore's opener.
Sure.
I know where you're going to be Friday.
Yeah.
I don't have to keep coming here. You will just see my comedy and then you will love me.
The interview right there.
Now I have to convince the comedy club to let me open.
Oh my God. It's like a heist.
And DL brings his own fucking people.
Yeah.
So he doesn't need a fucking.
The second you can bring your own people, you bring your own people.
So I go to the comedy club. I go to Bruce Ayers. And I go, hey, man, I just got hired at 95.7 as the intern.
That's a big shot downfield.
What are you going to do? Find out I lied and then just not book me and I'm still in the same fucking boat. So throw the bomb.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I just got hired at 95.7 and I know they host when DL comes. But I talked to Buck Wild. Buck said I could do 5 minutes and then bring up DL's opener. And then Bruce goes, all right, cool. Congratulations. See you Friday.
Did you have that feeling leaving that day where you're like, it worked?
What the? No, it hadn't worked yet, bitch. I had to get to Friday.
Yeah, you still got to do the set.
So I go back to the radio station. I wait till 10 o'clock. I wait for Buck and him to get off the air. Buck come back out in the parking lot. I go, hey, man, just so you know, I'm not going to bother you anymore, but I'm opening for D.O. Hughley on Friday. So when y'all come and do the shirts and everything, you'll be bringing me on stage. Just do me a favor. When you come off stage, just watch me. And if I'm not funny, we don't have to talk ever again.
Yeah.
He said, deal. Get to the comedy club that night. Now all I have to do is keep Buck Wild and Bruce Ayers apart.
This is like a sitcom. It's like Mrs. Doubtfire where he keeps running the change.
Neither of these motherfuckers know that I've lied to the other motherfucker.
You can't let them find out.
Fucking Bruce comes backstage. Okay, so what are we doing? What's the order? And then I just spring up. Yeah, Buck's gonna go out and give out the shirts. He'll bring me up. I'll do five.
Beautiful.
And DL, you cool? I think he had Malik S with him at the time. DL, and I'll bring up Malik. I'll bring you up. That's cool. DL, that's cool. That worked. I'm gonna do a tight three. I'm not even gonna do five. I'm with the radio station.
You really get a catch me if you can kind of version of getting a job where you're like, I know how to play it perfectly that if it goes right, you get away with it.
Bro, I don't know how it fucking, just one of those nights where every joke hits, every syllable hits, every mannerism.
Did you know on stage you're like, I got it?
Like, if he doesn't hire me, it's not because I wasn't funny.
Yeah.
I went out and I fucking did the job in front of Jams listeners. This is D.O. Hughley. This is the blackest, the fucking. And I got home field advantage because I know everybody. We didn't have time for this in this pod, but because my mom bounced me around to so many schools growing up in Birmingham, I knew the whole city.
Yeah.
Because I've been to the east side. I went to school on the south side. I started on the west side. I went to the boys club with this guy. Played fucking.
You really are like the comedic mayor of Birmingham.
So everyone at least knows me. You don't not already know me. And your fucking parents know my daddy.
Yeah.
So it's fucking home field advantage.
I mean, crazy home field advantage. Like a homecoming game.
I fucking crush.
That's great.
I crush that night. And I come off stage and Buck Wild is standing there and he says, "See you Monday morning, bring Krispy Kreme."
No way.
And that started my whole
And they invented
career.
An internship. Or they in got
Tallahassee,
you a job.
In Tallahassee, I created an internship that got me the leverage to get me the job in Birmingham.
And so you get the job and then you just start Monday.
I start Monday and that was it. And that's how I got my job in radio. And you have to start doing prank. And immediately I started getting my lumps because I'm not as funny as Ricky.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a rhythm you have to learn. But I could produce my ass off, though.
No one ever talks about in those moments of like, I fought for it and I got it. It's like a romance movie. They always stop the romance movie right as they get together. They don't show a year in when they hate each other for certain shit. And they're like, you ate my cereal. It's like, well, you dumb bitch. You shouldn't put it in there. They always just show like, I love you. I love you. And then it just ends like that. With job stories like that, they never tell you, oh, it sucked and I bombed.
They never tell you that part of it. And I feel like they also never tell you the fact that soldier through sucking. And if you're not good at one thing, figure out something else that you're good at within that job.
And or learn how to get, you can also learn how to get, to you. You can learn how to get good at it because we got to wrap up, but I did the same thing with KFMA in Tucson where I went to their website and I didn't wake up at 5:30 in the morning and go to the parking lot. Like that's a dedication that's blowing my mind. That you can be up that early.
I'm 21. What else I got to do?
I know exactly, but still 21, waking up that early.
If you
do like,
radio and you rip, you will eat forever because you have an audience. And so my idea was get on as a co-host, be funny here, and then Memphis will put me on. Mike Evans will put me on. I'm thinking of all the other local shows. If I do well here, then I know people in Atlanta will put me on the radio and I'll do well. Frank Ski will fuck with me because I'm funny
over
here.
It's just a step. Keep going.
You rip in Atlanta, whatever bit I'm doing. So the only thing I figured out was I could take my prank phone calls. At the time, this is pre-YouTube, pre-Napster, BearShare. I will put my pranks on my website for people to download after the show. Hey, if you like the prank from today, go to my website. And that's how I started building my email list and all
that's
that.
That's genius. I never had foresight like that. That is incredibly smart to be like, here you go.
But that was just ingenuity out of anger in a weird way. Because the IT guy at the station at the time, this motherfucker.
Engineers always beef with the on-air, by the way. If you're wondering about radio. Yeah, engineers, there is a legitimate division between on-air talent and engineers because engineers build everything, they make sure everything runs, and then they just look at on-air talent as the divas that fuck everything up. Greg Garcia, I hope you're doing all right, but we butted heads a lot and he used to get real mad. I got stoned on commercial breaks when I worked at KFMA. He'd be like, it's unprofessional, you're with a bunch of fucking equipment. And I was like, shut up, I'm gonna play corn when we
I'm
get back.
I'm busting my ass on these prank phone calls and we're only playing them once, and then we replay the best ones by request on Friday, but nothing else is being done with them.
So they're just being tossed aside.
So I go to the IT guy, I go, hey man. And this is before the idea of web traffic and creating content and a station needing to figure out how to draw people to the web.
I mean, that's what killed radio. It's exactly what killed radio.
I go to the IT guy, I go, hey man, you know what would be cool is if we just let the pranks live on the website. And then people could just go to 957jams.com and just listen to any prank they want whenever they want.
Yeah.
And we could put some ad or something beside and I could promote my comedy show. I'm not building out the server space. I'm the bandwidth. Do you even understand? I would have to reinstall Real Player.
Yeah, Real Player.
Embedded and I'm in a codec.
Yeah.
So all right, fuck it then. I'll just build my own. And that's when I bought my URL and built my website. I built my
out of like a fuck you, I'll do it.
Yeah, fuck you, Joe Boo, I do it myself.
Yeah.
And I put my prank calls on my own website just for Birmingham people. This is just for people in Birmingham. but they started downloading them and emailing them to other people. And so that, like in 02, 03, going viral meant you went viral over email.
Yeah.
So
you're on an email chain
with hundreds of other people who've seen this prank call and all thought it was funny and also passed it.
That's like it is the form of TikTok clips now.
It literally was that.
It was the genesis of retweets, of TikTok clips, of Instagram clips going viral.
I couldn't buy server space fast enough.
Really?
My site kept crashing from out of towners coming to download my shit. So then I'm like, okay, well then let's make a CD. Let's put that on the site to sell mail order. I'll do order fulfillment. And I'm not making any money in radio at this point. Yeah. Still. We're like still first year. Buck Wild is paying me out of his pocket a piece of his quarterly bonus just because he appreciates me. This man's salt of the earth. I'll take a fucking bullet for that, man. Like, I'm making my little bullshit money on the road doing stand-up, but I'm starting to understand this idea of the digital relationship with people. And so I took my pranks and I started condensing them. And this is to bring it back to how radio DJs really do help one another. I put like 20, 30 pranks on a CD. And I started mailing them to radio stations in markets where the comedy club did not book me.
So smart.
And I would tell that DJ, hey, man, just play my shit. All I ask is that you say my name. That's it. Say my website if you want, say it or not. But please say my name when you play my
shit. So the prank would blow up in that market.
Free content for you. Free exposure for me. Let that marinate for 3-4 months. Then call that bitch ass comedy club back. Go, hey, you bitch. You didn't book me before.
Yeah, but now
I'm on the radio. So I was asking for an MC slot. Now I want a feature.
Damn. You
and then I would get booked, and that helped me get booked. Then those DJs that work in Tupelo and El Paso and Killeen, eventually they work in Dallas. They work in Oklahoma City.
They bring you
in.
They remember you.
They work in Houston. Yeah. They work in New Orleans. And they keep playing my shit in those markets too. So I was able to grow. I grew with the DJ as their career grew, so that my free content with them. I didn't harness it right, man. I was ahead of the
curve. What are you talking about, harness it right? I'm listening to everything you did, and I'm like, I just legitimately got so stoned at every radio station. It was like, I'll just be funny on the mic. Nah. This is what you're saying. The map that you let out in the process is so well executed.
I just wish that I had done better with data collection. And then I put all my shit on YouTube, bro. In 2005, I had 150,000 YouTube followers. And then I got myself copyright striked because I just didn't value.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the value of the
listen, subs. I did a dumb thing like that when Comedy Central put out my hour special. Someone bootlegged it and put it on YouTube. And I remember the email where my agent was like, do we strike it down? And I was like, no, but we're gonna get in trouble, and I should have left it up because it would have gone, other people would have saw it, and instead no one saw it because Comedy Central, Central played a special twice.
And now the algorithm's so tight and the copyright crawler is so tight online,
you can't get that off.
I can't post my own shit from my own special.
I had Showtime strike down trailers that they gave me
to post. Yeah.
Email directly to me. And then they're like, no, copyright infringement. And you're like, you gave me it. I'm in the clip. And they're like,
call
no.
The person and, a guy in our department is supposed to whitelist you and put you on the VIP. You can post our shit list. And it's like, it never fucking
works. Man, first off, I appreciate you coming by and,
man, it's all good,
and talking radio. You're one of my favorite comedians. And being able to hang with you and talk with you. And I was excited when McDaniel got hired by the Dolphins. I texted Roy, but I don't think Roy knew I knew McDaniel. So I was just like, hey, I'm on board with the Dolphins. And you wrote me back like, all right. You wrote me back a thing like, who gives a shit? And then I told you, I'm like, no, I grew up with him. But you're a Dolphins fan.
Yeah.
And I know this is coming out in a couple weeks, but I am very nervous about Dolphins Bills for the division this Sunday.
Tua can pull it out his ass. That I believe.
Fingers crossed.
I believe Tua can pull that out of his ass. We need that home first rounder. Because what you don't want is to lose to Buffalo.
And then have to go.
And then have to go to fucking Buffalo.
Or go to KC. Yeah. Or go somewhere.
Yeah.
You're one of my favorite comedians. I've always said I think you should have been the host for The Daily Show.
Well, thank you, brother.
Right after Jon. I'm just going to say that.
Well, we'll
I think
see.
You are.
Who knows? By the time this airs, they probably still wouldn't have figured it out.
Yeah, so your stand-ups, but your stand-ups on a different level. I hope one day you become the mayor of Birmingham. You should be, with everything that's happened. Or maybe your son does. Maybe that's
I want him to stay in New York.
Keeping him in New York?
And I'll handle Birmingham, boy.
You go, let me go down and handle Birmingham. Yeah. It's like a snake. You got to put a glove on. You're like, now watch this. It'll bite you. You got to get right in its face.
What's weird about going back home now is that because I'm not there on a regular basis with radio and finger on the pulse of the community, I am kind of an outsider. So I do have to kind of make sure that I'm doing things in conjunction with locals that are really on the ground.
Well, now it's going
to... So it doesn't seem like I'm coming in just, I know how to fix it because I've been on cable.
Well, watch here. I got to host a correspondence dinner and they're like, well, that's not the energy we want. But if you go, I think you're warming yourself up perfectly for a show in Birmingham. Because now that you're a little displaced, you can come back and make the observations of, this is what I've noticed has changed.
I do know my last stand-up special will be shot in Birmingham.
Your final one?
Yeah, the last one. Because the first time I ever touched a stage was Birmingham.
So you want it to complete the cycle?
It's a perfect bookend.
Yeah. Well,
that's not for at least another, I don't know, 10 years, five.
Until they shut down stand-up and we have to go back to terrestrial radio.
No, bitch. These holograms coming. You're gonna
have to AI and holograms.
You're going to have to compete with the ghost of Bernie Mac. Yeah, the funny you're like, bone.
Oh, I got bumped for Pryor again. The prior hologram. Prior
AI. Yeah.
Richard Jenny's bumping me again. Yeah. This, all these guys are coming back.
Shit's funny now. It ain't going to be funny.
It's like Ghostbusters.
When you're the sex robots start becoming performance robots. Yeah.
Who programmed the Patrice O'Neill into the sex robot? Just talking shit.
Look at you, bitch. You robot, bitch.
Yeah, look at your tiny dick. And you go, I bought you because you were supposed to let me fuck you. Roy, you're the man, dude. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, man.
Website, go see him live. Roy Woods. Go watch his specials. Just go enjoy Roy Woods.
They're free on YouTube. Like, you don't even have to go through the Paramount Plus fuckery.
They put them up?
Finally.
Did they really?
Yeah, it took a whole pandemic. For the bit, finally.
Go watch Royce and go watch mine. I got a couple specials out of Comedy Central.
Sure your shit's up.
I got to go look up Comedy Central YouTube.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of my shit. I didn't even know they were putting it out. You're the man, dude. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
and
bro.
Go Dolphins.
Yes, absolutely.
Go Dolphins, go Niners.
Yeah. Wait, what?